Welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 59, recorded April 25th, 2011.
Well, hello and greetings all.
Hello.
I guess hello and greetings is sort of redundant, but there
That's
you go.
That's okay.
All right, well.
I will add salutations to it. How about that?
Today, we would like to first start with some information that Brian sent us. Brian from Idaho, so let's take a look at that.
He sent us a couple of articles.
Yes, we're going to discuss one of them in some depth. The first one, although both of them are very noteworthy. Thank you, Brian, for sending those. We appreciate that every time. He's provided us with articles on other occasions as well, and we're always grateful for that. The title of this article is
1.2 million Marineland Stealth and Stealth Pro Aquarium Heaters Recalled.
Yeah, it's new stuff. It was posted today. So if you have a Marineland Stealth or a Marineland Stealth Pro,
listen up.
They are, it's kind of scary. It's hard to tell if this means that all of the models are affected from this article exactly, but there are a lot of model numbers that are affected, both the Stealth and the Stealth Pro. The Stealth is an older model. The easy way to tell if you have a Stealth or a Stealth Pro, the Stealth has white writing on it, and the Stealth Pro has that color. What's that color?
That's red. He's colorblind. That's
only partially.
So I just red-green.
Wanted to make sure I said the right color. I thought it probably
it's red.
But didn't know for sure. So, there we go. The model numbers that are affected, it looks like, they're the Stealth models, they start with ET and an ATP 25, 50, 75, 100, 150, 200, and 250. Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
And for the Stealth Pro, ML90447, and then the last number, 89, and then ML90450, 451, 452, 453, and 454. And then double zeros after all those. I hope that was clear. We'll put this link on the website anyway. But basically, check that out if you have one. If you're not sure what kind of heater you have, just go check. It can be scary.
Yeah, it says, of the things in here are a little bit scary.
Yeah, it says that 38 reports of fires resulting in property damage, 45 reports of broken aquarium glass, and one report of a consumer who suffered an eye injury when the aquarium heater forcefully broke while he held it. I just quoted all that last part from this article that I'm reading from the link that Brian sent. It's reefbuilders.com.
It's on that site.
It's on that pipe. Yeah, that's where I found it. It's posted on April 25th, 2011 by Ryan Gripp. There you go. So, that's something that needs to be dealt with. I actually also received an email from PetSmart, I think, with this information in it, but there you go. So, if you have a black plastic heater, you probably better go look at it and make sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say. Not all black plastic heaters are Marineland Stealth or Marineland Stealth Pro, but most of them probably are. Enough that you should just go take a look. So that's something
better
scary
safe
doesn't
than
happen.
Sorry.
That worries me a bit. We've got one Stealth Pro and, like, I don't know how many Marineland Stealth.
So what are they doing for the recall? I mean, do you take it back to the store where you bought it? Do you send it back to the company? Does it tell us in the article?
You take it back to the store. It says,
do you have to have the receipt still?
You can bring your old heater to any PetSmart or Petco for a full refund. Probably not.
Oh, okay.
Probably not.
Because I imagine a lot of people had it long enough, they don't have the receipt anymore.
Yeah.
So just take it to a Petco or a PetSmart and ask them about the recall and the refund.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be the way to do it. And you can also just call, it's United Pet Group, according to the letter that's been scanned in here. You can call them at 800-338-4896. Between 7:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. So, that's... It says a wiring problem may cause the heater to overheat or break during normal use. The force of the heater breaking may cause it to shatter or may break the aquarium glass. quoting again from the letter here. So, something...
Go check your heaters!
...you have to deal with. Yeah.
Brian, thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, that's a pretty important issue. He also included another one here that is from Practical Fish Keeping, a great internet magazine out of the UK. It is a nice way to set up a planted tank to aquascape that. So check that out. It's got a step-by-step guide with pictures and everything. And
looks very nice.
Yeah, the aquascaping is really pretty nice, and it gives you the step-by-step, which is also very nice, because sometimes that's the best way to start out. You just follow a model that already exists step-by-step, and then that kind of, you can appreciate what you've done there, but it also kind of gives you a leg up to try your own, you know, a little bit like that. So, thank you again for that. Brian has also indicated that he's landscaped the area around his pond that we talked about a few episodes mm-hmm. ago, and he is about to fill it up and prep it for stocking, and when he does so, he'll take some pics and post them. But he's going to be busy with his job working with some salmon in the Salmon River in Idaho, so that will take him away from his pond work at times. But hey, that's fun. He's working with fish.
That's pretty cool. Congratulations.
And so it'll kind of detract from him being able to work on his pond, but that's
okay.
Look
forward to the pictures on your days off.
Yeah. That does bring me to something I wanted to mention.
What
that
do
I
you want to mention?
Hadn't for a while. It occurs to me that we've talked a couple of times about native fish
mm-hmm.
and about whether I'd kept native fish, and I actually have. And I had sort of forgotten about most of the native fish
what
that I'd kept.
What did you keep?
Some of the species that I've had the most experience with are two mosquito fish, the eastern mosquito fish and the gambusia. Both are called mosquito fish. The eastern mosquito fish is also called Heterandria formosa. That's the scientific name. It's also called the least killifish. And then gambusia, either affinis or holbrooki. Is the other mosquito fish that looks a lot like a guppy. They were in episode, is that 57? The one in Louisiana? Yeah. Those I've kept both of those somewhat extensively.
You've kept the ones in Louisiana?
Yeah.
Or just like a variation?
No, the same species. Or at least the same genus. I mean, there are a couple of species. Mm-hmm. There are Finnis and Holbrooki, and there may be others. But I've kept one of them. I'm not sure which one it was. And then I've kept Heterandria formosa, the least killifish, or the eastern mosquito fish. So we're going to talk about those a little bit today.
Okay, let's talk about those.
I should have talked about them before.
Why not?
When people have mentioned that. So let's talk about the gambusia first. Okay. Apparently the word gambusia comes from Greek and means something like nothing. Because it's such a, I guess, a fish you wouldn't necessarily notice out in the wild just by itself, because they're small and they're kind of a drab, olivey color. They're a live bearer. They're not... they look a lot like a female guppy. The females do. But one way you can tell them apart is they've got a... It's a bar through the eye. It's a vertical bar that goes through their eye approximately.
What color
bar.
Is it?
It's kind of a dark... Maybe a black color. The males have that too. The males don't have colors like a guppy does, and their gonopodium is longer in relation to their body size. There are a few. I don't know if they're cultivars or varieties or subspecies or something, but some of them, the males can have quite a bit of dark coloration on them, on their bodies, almost like a mottled molly. Quite a lot of dark on them. The females, I guess, less so. That's not the type I kept, though, so I don't have any personal experience with that type. But these fish, because of their ability to eat mosquitoes, like guppies, have been transported to many different parts of the world where they don't naturally occur. They're naturally a fish that occurs in the southeastern United States, for example, Louisiana, like I saw on the trip, but in many other states as well. But they've been introduced all over the place. They're in Utah, where we are. There are a lot
just
of them.
Just from being introduced.
From being introduced, as far as I can tell. They're all over in the Provo River and other places, but that's where I believe I collected mine.
Is that Utah Lake?
Well, Provo River goes into Utah Lake. Right. And some time ago, I was a teenager, and the statute of limitations probably kicked in by now. But I collected some there. And I remember a fish and game officer saw me, you know, puttering around with a net and saying, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm catching gambusias." And he said, "Well, you can't catch whatever you said."
Very knowledgeable staff.
Which was kind of funny. So he said something very like that. Anyway, he probably knew them by another name or something. But anyway, I did not heed his stricture. I did not.
You rebel.
Didn't follow what he said.
You
but this is a
rebel.
Long time ago. This is years and years ago. And I brought, you know, a dozen or so of them home and kept them for a while, both indoors and outdoors, as I recall. And found quite soon that they're mean. They're rather aggressive.
They beat on each
notorious
other?
Notorious fin nippers. Well, they'll beat on each other somewhat, but they'll especially beat on other fish. You put them with guppies or whatever.
They're not such good community tank.
No.
Fish.
No, not at all. They're not... it's not safe to put fish that you caught outside into your own tank, necessarily. At least you should quarantine... I mean, with other fish, with other species of fish, you should quarantine them first, which I didn't do at this time. Once again, this was years and years ago. I don't recall that I had any problems with diseases from that, but you could very easily introduce parasites and or other types of diseases in with your fish by collecting fish from outside. But the main issue I had was just that they were violent, and they took chunks out of
other
things.
What did you put them in with?
I wish I could recall. It's been a long time. But I do remember seeing how quickly I began to see shredded fins. So as I remember, I think I removed them to an outdoor pond not too long after that. But they weren't picky. They're pretty tough little fish. And they breed in a manner similar to that of guppies. You know,
same kind of thing.
They are live bears, yep. There was, in fact, an article about the three types of mosquito fish in, or the two types of mosquito fish in Aquarium Fish International not long ago. So that sort of reminded me of it. But I'm talking about my own experience. And then there's the other fish, which are Heterandria formosa, or otherwise known as least killifish or eastern mosquito fish. These are quite a bit different. They are smaller, for one. An adult gambusia gets to be, a male gets to be about an inch long, and a female can get quite a bit bigger than that. 2, 2.5, maybe even 3 inches. That's a really big one, but they can get a little bigger than most female guppies. Eastern mosquito fish are much smaller. The males usually are smaller than an inch, like 3/4 of an inch or something like that. And the females are a little bigger, but not much. The biggest ones I ever had were about an inch long. And they're much more attractively colored. They're not brightly colored, but they have some black bars and things like that on them. And I found some in a pet store one day and asked if I could get some. I knew the guy there, and I think he said that they came out in a shipment of something else, but he picked them out for me or whatever. Mm. And I put them, they were, you know, really ridiculously small. So I put them in a 2-gallon tank with filter and with some Java moss and things like that growing in there. And they begin to reproduce. They reproduce in a way that's a little different. They are live bears, but this is the interesting thing.
But the interesting thing, we'll have to wait until after the break.
Okay.
We'll be right back. This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful. No, was it? Okay, now we're back. So, now tell us what is different about their reproductive methods.
They reproduce in a manner known as superfetation.
What does that mean?
Where they can have within their bodies at any given time young fish that are in various stages of development. Now, as I understand it, when a guppy mates, and many other live bearers mate, not all, but many others, when they mate, the sperm are stored, and then after one litter of babies is developed, then some of the sperm fertilize some more eggs, and they go on to develop. And so you can have several batches of babies from one mating, with a long, you know, period of time ensuing with no more mating. One mating can lead to 5, maybe 8 batches of babies based on those sperm. The eastern mosquito fish is a little different in that they can do this sperm storing thing, but they also can have various stages of development of babies in the mother at any given time.
So it'd be like getting pregnant when you're already pregnant.
Yes.
Which is such an exhausting thought.
Yes.
That it's just depressing.
For humans, that indeed would be. For fish, luckily, they don't have to invest quite as many resources per baby, so it's a little easier. But, you know, kangaroos and other animals do that too. A kangaroo can be pregnant and have a small baby in the pouch and a large baby in the pouch. It's just about to leave.
Oy.
Kind of crazy. But it's sort of the same thing. That's also superfetation. So the idea is that they give birth to developed babies just a few at a time, because there are several more in other stages of development inside, and then they'll give birth to those and keep going like that. So you don't get a large batch like you with guppies or mollies or swordtails.
It's more of a continuous trickle.
It's more of a trickle, yeah, and it's not quite continuous, but you might have a trickle for several weeks and then a little pause, and then a more trickle for several weeks and so on, which is nice for a small colony of these fish. And the one I set up went just fine for many years. It was fun to keep them because they're so small that you can keep them, like I said, in a 2-gallon tank. And I had this little colony going of maybe, I don't know, 15 or so of them at any given time, somewhere around there. And they just did just fine breeding in there. I gave them microworms and finely powdered flake food, and I probably some Daphne and things like that, and they did great. Eventually what happened, though, when I was overseas, somebody took that bowl and decided to consolidate. It was a 2-gallon bowl with a filter and everything in it, which I don't really, you know, think bowls are useful for very many things, but it worked fine for this little teeny colony of eastern mosquito fish. And someone put it into a 10-gallon tank that had some other larger fish in it.
Oh, dear.
So by the time I got back, there were, I think, 2 females left and no males.
Oh.
So I wasn't able to resurrect the colony from those 2. It was too bad.
That's sad.
Yeah. But they were fun. I liked them. And those were the mosquito fish, 2 different types of mosquito fish that, you know, if you want to know more about them, go check out the article in Aquarium Fish. But that brings us to something else.
The other article in Aquarium Fish.
Yes.
Which is written by our own Russ.
Well, one thing I would like to say about it is that last week we made a cryptic reference to it. And because in the title, it's of course Aquarium Hitchhikers. That's what it's about. And in the subheading, it uses the words "Don't Panic." And we said, "Does anybody get the Adams reference?" And Brian did get the Adams reference.
He
noticed that. He was amused by that. So thank you, Brian, for getting that. It's of course a reference to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams.
Which, if you haven't read, you should go read it.
It's a fun book. A fun series, in fact, of several books. But this is the thing. I wrote that article quite a while ago, and so I had forgotten that it wasn't me who came up with that using the "don't panic."
You know, they were kind of inspired, though, because that is something that you would say anyways.
It is something I would say anyways, because I love Douglas
Adams. It was
fitting. But, yes, so that was AFI, Aquarium Fish International, who put the "don't panic" part in there. But I highly approve of it. And so
it's officially endorsed.
Yeah, so I'm glad that they put that in there, because that just makes it all the more fun. And
it's in the June issue.
Yeah, it's in the June issue.
And it's all about what to do when you find random things in your tank that you didn't put there.
And I can talk about it now, because both Carlos and Brian have noticed it. So they
people who have it's a
obviously out. It's out, so I can talk about it. I usually get an article. I get some proof copies of the article a little while before it's published, but so I can't say anything right away.
It's all very hush-hush.
Yes, but now I can talk about it. And, of course, I always look over the article after it's published and say, oh, there were a few things I said wrong, and I can't believe I said that. I should have said this instead, but, you know, check it out if you like to.
It's good. Go read it.
And it's actually...
In fact, write Aquarium Fish International and tell them that they should give Russ a column.
I don't think you can say that on the air.
Why not?
I don't know. But
That'd be awesome.
The article is actually the first one I wrote for them, which is not the first one that was published, because, you know, publishing works that way. But that doesn't matter. It's fine. It's actually kind of funny. The mm-hmm. first article is the last one, and the last one is the first one.
The most recent one that they've published.
Yeah. So there you go.
We're just glad they published it. It's
yes,
very fun.
I am very glad that they published it. I think it's fun to see your name in print and so on. An interesting thing, too, is that they had someone do the illustrations for it. It's not photographs. It's
they're
all illustrations, and I really liked the illustrations they did, too.
All the little critters.
Mm-hmm. I guess it would be hard to... Well, you could do microphotography of copepods and things like that, but...
It's probably just easier to draw.
It's probably easier to draw some of those things, so there you go. There was something else I wanted to talk about, too.
What was that?
That was... been growing some triops at work lately.
Yes.
One of many generations of triops. And part of the trick with triops is they have to eat a lot. It's something like 40% of their body mass every 24 hours.
Wow.
They're crazy eaters. So I've been working on things that they can eat during the weekend. Because often, lately I've been going in on the weekend once to feed them. But they go at least one day without me feeding them, so I've been trying to figure out what works. And of course, sliced carrots works. That's not my idea. Somebody else's. But you put a couple of slices of carrot in there and they gnaw at those, and that helps. But I thought, well, hard-boiled egg... Yolk. Not yolk. No, that wouldn't work at all. Sorry, I can't believe I just said yolk. Hard-boiled...
It's okay, it was egg, a yolk.
Egg white. Ha ha.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
That was bad.
Hard-boiled egg white tends not to decompose super quickly in water. So I decided to try that and see how they did on it. Because it works great for baby bristlenose plecos. You know, for a protein source. Put a little slice of that in there and they go to town on that. But it doesn't decompose immediately in the water. Or dissolve like an algae chip would.
Make it all cloudy.
And so I put a chunk in there, and over the weekend they consumed that thing, and they were just fine, and none of them had eaten any others. They were all still going, and they were quite a bit bigger than they were when I left. So it apparently worked fairly well.
So hooray for Easter eggs!
Yeah. It was actually an egg there slightly before Easter, but...
That's okay.
But yeah, it kind of coincides.
Just go with it.
Okay.
You know.
Kind of coincides. So we were excited
Everybody's
to see
Everybody's got lots of Easter
that
eggs
that
left
works.
Over. I'm sure they can feed them to things.
Yes. And I wanted to mention something about spirulina, too.
Tell us about spirulina.
But did I say that Carlos mentioned something on the article? There were two people on Facebook.
He did.
One was Brian and one was Carlos. So thank you, both of you, for mentioning the article on Facebook. Okay. So I was going to talk about spirulina. Because spirulina is great. For a lot of things.
Fun to say.
Yeah, lots of things are fun to say. Okay.
Okay, and if you get that reference, then you're way, way cool, and you should, like, write us in and get a prize or something.
Yes. Actually, the whole quote would be, many things on Marva are fun to say. So if you, yes. if you know where that's from, let us know.
Okay.
Anyway.
That was our tangent, sorry.
Yes. Spirulina is actually not an algae. People call it an algae, but I guess it's a cyanobacteria. So... Anyway, the spirulina is very useful for a lot of things. It's used as a health supplement for people because it's high in protein and a lot of micronutrients. But, of course, it's also useful for fish. It's great as a color enhancer. You can add that to a mix if you're making your own fish food as a color enhancer because it contains a lot of carotenoids that are used in lots of different colors, especially reds, yellows, and oranges. But carotenoids can also be... assimilated by a lot of species in ways that they then can use them to form other colors as well, but those are the famous ones, the reds, the orange, and the yellows. However, It's not just a fish food. It can also be used to feed brine shrimp. It can be used to feed Daphne and all sorts of things like that. So I've used spirulina as a food for quite a while for several things. I give it to my opaula, of course, and that's great. But I just recently bought some. I'm trying to figure out the best way to store it, and I figured that I think the best way to store it is to keep it in the refrigerator and use one of those silicon dioxide packs that come with
vitamins
or nori seaweed, different things like that. Keep it in that, keep it sealed up, and then just take small amounts out of it at a time. And I've been pouring it into purified water and giving that as a liquid form after I blend it up to my wee little Daphnia and to the brine shrimp and so on. And then I just give it in powdered form at the surface to the opaula and the brine shrimp, and they
like
seem to like that too.
Lick it off the surface.
Yeah. The other
not
day,
lick, but you know.
No, they sort of they wiggle their phylopods, their legs up there, mm-hmm. and they get some of it.
Imagine
that way.
Sea monkey Shakespeare. Do you wiggle your phylopods at me, sir? I wiggle my phylopods, but I do not wiggle my phylopods at you, sir. Sorry. Okay.
Okay, that, I kind of like
I'll stop.
That.
I'm in a weird mood.
It's kind of fun, actually. But it seems to be working pretty well. It seems to be a good food for all the critters. I put it in with the wee little Daphnia, and they all turned green very quickly, so they must have been eating it.
King way.
And as you may recall, in a recent episode, there was the website about the guy, what's his name, Big Bear Husky Musher on YouTube, who raises them.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses just powdered spirulina he puts on the surface, and the brine shrimp go crazy
down.
Over it. And the little tank that I've set up with the brine shrimp and the opaula as a sort of an experiment seems to be thriving on that and some other planktonic food, doing very well. And I've also put an olive nerite in there. It's working really well. It has an LED light on it, the surface.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah. The LED is funny because it doesn't really... It's sort of a target light. It targets the center of the tank. You can raise it and lower it, which helps a little bit, but it doesn't seem to spread all over the tank equally, but it seems to work anyway. It sort of hits that pile of lava rock there in the middle and makes it look kind of fun. So there you go.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Did we go over everything for this time?
I think we have.
So if you guys have a topic that you would like us to discuss, feel free to let us know.
Or you would like to participate in an interview.
If you have something really cool, groovy project going on that you think merits an interview, give us a call.
Yes, even if you think it doesn't, because many of you have very fascinating topics, but you just don't think of them that way because...
You're used to them.
So, you know, we're always on the lookout for things we haven't talked about yet, or even things we have, but maybe we need to revisit them because we haven't finished talking about
them.
There's
always more to say.
So... I really, if any of you keep bumblebee gobies, I think bumblebee gobies are fascinating. Or freshwater pipefish, or, you know, hatchet fish. Things that I haven't kept.
Sea dragons.
African butterfly fish. Well, yeah, sea dragons.
I know they can't actually keep sea dragons. But if any of you work in an aquarium where they keep sea dragons.
You know, we'd love to talk to you about any species that we haven't talked about. Even if it's, you know, we haven't talked extensively about mollies either. We could.
That was one of my first favorite fish.
Yeah. So, you know, if you have any kind of fish you want to talk about, or you have any particular question you want to talk about, or...
Let us know.
Yeah, we're ready to go. And you can contact us through...
Email.
info@aquarimax.com.
Our Google Voice number.
Yes, which is on the website.
And Twitter, and Facebook, and YouTube...
Yeah, and
did I get them all?
I think that's all. So,
okay.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Have a good week.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.